Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the Niagara Wine Trail USA, 20 wineries starting in western Monroe County between Rochester and Niagara Falls, flanked by Lake Ontario and the Niagara Escarpment. Niagara Wine Trail, uncork a natural wonder. NiagaraWineTrail.org.
From WXXI News, this is Innovation Friday on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. In our second hour of Innovation Friday, we're looking at programs designed to help kids when they have maybe a great idea, but maybe not a lot of ways to follow through with that. They need some support. Here's a program designed to help them out. We're going to be talking about some, well, the kind of the business community from the younger perspective and some of these ideas out there and how we get them to fruition with some people who have some experience with that. Now, the editor of the Innovation Trail is Matthew Leonard, and he's always the brain behind this operation on the fourth Friday of every month. Nice to see you again here, Matthew.
Thanks for having us again, Evan. And great to be joined in the studio by a couple of Rochester business owners, Viet Nguyen. Viet, great to have you with us, and Latrell Liptrot. And so is it PHU Concepts or is it FU Concepts?
FU
Concepts.
FU, PHU, FU Concepts.
Okay, yeah. Great. And also on the line as well is Malcolm Dighton. Malcolm, thanks very much for joining Innovation Friday. You're there on the phone as well.
Hi.
Hey, great. Thanks very much for making time to join us.
You're welcome.
Great. So so you know our guests here in the studio, right? You guys met last week, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. So let's back up and we'll tell fill the listeners in on what we're talking about. This was a project that we came across with Community First, an organization here in Rochester that's doing a lot of work with in the northeast part of the city, young African-American Latino youth. And they ran a sort of a Shark Tank event during the summer, which was to support people who wanted to get a business plan together, and then have them put into have their designs presented to some real business owners who are already up and running and know the challenges of businesses here in Rochester and get some feedback. So, have I pretty much got it right, Malcolm? Is that kind of how the whole thing ran?
Yes.
Okay. So, tell us a bit about you. Where do you live in town?
I live in West Henrietta.
Yep. And so, how did you get involved in this summer project?
I've been doing it, well, this is my third year now, so I've been doing it for quite a while.
Okay, so what school do you go to?
I go to Rush Henrietta High School.
Okay, and so how did you get, when you say you've been doing this for a while, do you mean working on your idea, or do you mean that the program's been running for a while now?
The program.
Okay. So tell us, what did you have to do? How long did you have to be involved in doing it this past summer?
Well, the project?
Yeah.
I think it was 6 weeks. Well, five. To get our idea and to make a template and just get our stuff together.
Okay. And so you were working with a couple of other people on the same idea, right?
Yes.
Okay, and do you want to do a shout out to them?
Yes. wait, do I want to?
Yeah.
You tell us who else was working on it.
A successful idea is not just one person, Malcolm. Who else is with you here on this?
Huh?
Nathaniel, yeah?
Yeah.
Nathaniel McGriff and Devon Sloan. Have I got it right?
Yeah.
Okay.
There was another one, too.
Okay, who was that?
Yeah, Robert Lovelace.
Okay, awesome. So it was a four-person team. So tell us, how did you guys get together? And tell us about your idea. What was your idea that you brought through this process?
It was our ideal ransom. It was about a TV show voting game. And first we were going to do sports. But then I got the idea, like, not everybody likes sports. We got to, like, attend a different audience. So I said, why not TV shows? And he's like, yeah, I like that. But it was on a Friday, and Nate wasn't there. So we had to, like, wait on it. And then the next Monday, we all got together, and we was like, yeah, that's a pretty good idea. And that's where we went from.
Okay. So you had this idea. So tell us a little bit more about this is something that you put on your smartphone or your computer, and what does it let you do?
It lets you vote on any show. Well, any show you want that has voting, like Dance with the Stars, X Factor, American Idol, et cetera. Shows like that.
Okay. So Malcolm...
There's Malcolm only millions of people who would be interested in something like this.
Just millions.
Absolutely. So you thought about your market well ahead. Malcolm, I just wanted to tell you that my co-host here, Evan Dawson, has personal experience of Dancing with the Stars and would be extremely interested in this voting app. It sounds like a pretty timely thing. I mean, we know there's a lot of crowdsourced voting that's driving a lot of popular entertainment television now. So, I mean, was that really why you guys thought it was a chance to kind of bring a whole lot of voting applications together so you could vote on what? On American Idol, on The Bachelorette, on whatever?
Yeah. Because it was more like, because when you're watching the TV show, at the end, like, vote, text this number to vote here about who you want to vote on. And it's like, why go through that process of voting and texting? And some people don't even have mobile devices that they could text on.
Right.
So we just made it simpler and more accessible just to, like, vote on who you want.
Okay. So you developed this over 5 or 6 weeks, and then you met our studio guests, so Viet and Latrell. So tell us about what did you see when these young people presented their idea at the end of this process? You guys kind of came in at the end of the...
Yes, we heard their presentation, and we were very, very, very impressed.
Yes.
The idea is just great. It makes you have sort of like one way of doing things so that the networks that want to push these voting events, it's really easy. You don't have to say text this. You know, people, when they text 5-digit numbers, they might get charged and they get scared of this. Then they make their own app, and then, you know, next thing you know, you have like 10 apps for different TV networks. So it's good for the customer because you have one app, but it's also good for the networks also because they've already been promoting it and they're more likely to vote if it's a very popular app that you're using for every other show.
So, Latrell, let me ask you, how important is the kind of presentation, you know, with an idea like this? Sounds good, you know. How important is it when they have the opportunity to actually say, okay, here's your idea, you know?
I think it's very important. And with something like this, it's outside of the box. So it's not something that I think like five other people probably would have said, like, well, I want to start candy store, or I want to start a sneaker store.
Or what do you always see? I'm going to make the next Facebook. I'm going to make Facebook, but better.
Right.
So this was, you know, pretty much different. So it caught my eye as far as like what they presented. As far as asking your question, it's kind of, well, how the way like when me and Viet got started, we never presented anything to anyone.
Right.
It was more of an ideal, and we just went with that. But I think how the way they sold themselves and how the way they explained their product, I think that was on point, and it was very different.
Okay. So we've actually got some sound. Our engineer John's just reaching for the press button right now, and we're going to have a little bit of a listen to the presentation that you guys were at. That was when Malcolm and his team presented the app.
We're kind of hired to take a group of kids who are in the Summer of Opportunity Employment Program and break them up into smaller teams and have them start up their own business based on whatever their interests were, and that ranged from app designs to sneaker customization, and showing them the processes of thinking financially. It's one thing to want to have a business, but it's another thing to kind of think about how you advertise and if your idea has a market where you're living, and how to find markets where you can sell your product. So it was a 6-week, kind of 6-step program of showing them just the basics on how to do this, and some of them kind of took it and ran with it, and a lot of them I feel got a lot out of the program. You guys ready to go? Okay. Do all of you guys have a shirt, a button-up shirt?
Yeah, mine is just
a... Okay. I just want to reiterate what I said yesterday. Don't get frustrated or don't be offended when Mr. Harrison or myself gets kind of particular about one thing or another. It's because you guys have put in all this work over the entire summer, and you guys definitely should be able to have the best presentations possible. Revolution VVR, you guys are on deck, so we're all going to go upstairs right now.
Yeah. And we're gonna get started. So if you guys have your presentations uploaded on the laptops, get ready to show them, okay? All right, let's go.
What's your favorite TV show? Reality TV show?
The Voice.
How about yours?
I always admit to Dancing with the Stars. I think it's cute.
All right.
So. I have your beat. I have Project Runway.
Oh, my God.
All right, so say if you wanted to vote on your show.
Oh, sure, me. Okay, yeah.
And you wanted to vote on your show. And you also like her show, too. So we created this app. You could vote on many shows as you want. One show, two shows. Shoot, why not three?
We wanted to create this app because the process for voting for reality TV shows is kind of ancient, so to speak. So we wanted to make it like fresh and new and more accessible to everybody.
All right, so as Quan mentioned, this app lets you vote on tons of shows all in one app. And we've noticed that there are no apps like this on the market. Those apps let you vote on only one show, and that's it. We thought, why only one show? Why not tons of them? So that is what we did with this app, Ransom. And so no one was left out. There's a suggestion page. So if you have a show that you want on our app, you would tell us. We would take that feedback, put it back into the app, and boom, your show is now on our app, Ransom.
Well, have you ever, done something that you regretted?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, with Ransom, like, when you put in your answer, it gets locked in, so you can't change it. But you can change it with these items called switchers. There are two varieties of switchers. There's the Take a Chance switcher, which lets you, it randomizes and just goes to a random answer and locks it back in. And then there's a second chance switcher where you can go back and, like, re-choose what you wanted, like, which character you wanted to be eliminated. You can also buy them in packs, so you don't have to buy them individually one by one. You know? We were planning on making a profit by having ad space on our app. And the companies that, make the shows can have ad space on our app. So then they get publicity, and then we get paid for ad space. So it's kind of a win-win situation.
So for folks who just joined us, we're just listening to a presentation of a group of young business developers. One of them's right on the phone now, Malcolm Dighton. Malcolm, you heard yourself in the mix there?
Hello.
Hi, can you still hear us okay? did that bring the memories back, hearing that presentation from last week?
Yeah.
So you did mounted a pretty compelling case for this. Can you just tell us sort of where is this product up to in terms of completion? Like, how is it just an idea, or is there some functionality that you've been able to develop for the idea?
I haven't really got into that, but I've been wanting to make it like a real thing.
Yep. So it's more presenting the concept, right?
Yeah.
So, Viet, where do you think these guys need to take, if they really want to turn this into a real thing, what are the next stages that they might need to look at?
I would say they should get into this world a little bit more, learn a little about it more, don't be experts at it, and find out which approach you want to take. Do you want to actually learn how to develop apps, or do you just want to know about it? Do you want to hire somebody? Do you want to have a partner that is invested into it with you? So I think that's how you really should move forward. You have to come up with those decisions first.
And was that stuff that, Malcolm, is that stuff that you've sort of got into that yet, or you really just sort of got the idea finished and then did the presentation? Are you starting to think about the next step?
Yeah, more that. Think about the next step.
Yeah,
and can I also ask Malcolm, part of the whole point of this is you find people with good ideas, people like you, and then you find people with expertise on how to help make that a reality. How important is it for you to get this kind of help? I mean, we all can come up with ideas, but we don't all have expertise on how to implement things and get it all going. What does it mean for you, and how important is it for you to get that help?
Very important.
Well, they say a close mouth don't get fed. So my suggestion is you keep reaching out to firms like marketing firms, as far as like with me and Viet. And you got to network more. You know, you got to be more involved in this industry, and you got to surround yourself with people pretty much who's doing the same thing as far as where you want to go with your business venture. And I think this was like one of the best steps that you and your team could have taken, is presenting it to some established firms and, you know, speaking out, talking.
You're hearing the voice of Latrell Liptrot. Did I get it right, Latrell?
Yes,
there
sir.
There you go. And Viet Nguyen from Foo Concepts. And if you're just joining us, can you guys explain real briefly again what Foo Concepts is? I'll start with Latrell.
Yes, Foo Concepts is a marketing firm.
Yep. So we provide marketing tools to our clients. We provide web development, business automation. We do software, hardware, some print design, some actual printing, but mainly web development, e-commerce solutions.
And you've both said, you didn't have necessarily the kind of guidance that someone like Malcolm is getting, right?
No, we did not have that. We actually look for our mentors and people to follow through books and also online, because sometimes it's hard to find a mentor or somebody to get close to. As far as, like, say if I didn't know you from anywhere, mm-hmm. I think it would kind of be hard for you to come up to me and be like, hey, I have an idea. Can you mentor me, or can you give me some suggestions? So what me and Viet did, we looked at a lot of people in the past. I'm talking about even in the 1800s. We didn't discriminate on if they are alive or if they are dead. So we basically we found information that we needed to hear to make us know that, you know, having faith and believing in what we want to do, that it could work, because they also did the same thing too. So it don't necessarily have to be into apps or in marketing, but you need to find more mentors who had the same idea, who had a vision or ideal and wanted to make it come to life. So you got to find more mentors, and you got to surround yourself in that same, try to set yourself around in that industry a little bit more, and right. You'll get more tips.
No, that's good advice. I mean, I think things like team building, you know, just like how to run a team.
Yes.
That's not something that's exclusive to that particular project. Mm-hmm. So, Malcolm, how easy do you think it's going to be for you to kind of keep the momentum going? You know, like what I'm hearing from our guests in the studio is, yeah, it's just sort of, it's going to be a matter of, you know, trying to keep up the relationship, you know, trying to stay in contact with, you know, people like these gentlemen here, and also just look for other opportunities through the business, you know. And it'd be an interesting discussion to have about how open the business community is to doing, you know, this kind of mentoring sort of stuff. So Malcolm, it sounds like, yeah, the relationship thing is really important to what you're trying to do now.
Yeah. I kind of figured that, you know, but I don't really have that many mentors or any of that that can help me.
Right.
In that way.
Yeah.
Well, I think it sounds like these guys are reaching out a little bit, and I think there's probably other businesses too. So, you know, we should try and keep you connected so that you can sort of take it to the next level. And there's definitely other ways that you can do that through things like Kickstarter. You know, it could be a way to raise a little bit of, you know, seed capital. Guys, I'm just wondering, you know, did you go to the bank manager, or did you raid the credit cards, or, you know, in the pre-Kickstarter environment?
Well, I mean,
how did you sort of come up with capital for your idea?
Just as you said before, it's like the contrast with the Shark Tank ideal and the way we got started. The way we got started was, we just really had a vision. We didn't look for any capital investors. We didn't want to wait for grants. We didn't want to wait for venture capitalists.
Right.
We really just used what we had, and we did a lot of research, and we really just was boots on the ground. All right, let's make websites. Let's go door to door and let's see how we can do a website. Let's work out of our bedroom. Let's work our way to a coffee shop. Then let's move into a building. Let's buy a building. Let's do this. Let's do that. So we didn't wait for anything. We just went straight forward.
And we just didn't focus on the United States to do business. We realized when the United States is not spending internationally, they are spending. So we just didn't close our minds and just say, you know what, we're just going to focus on Rochester. So you gotta be willing to sacrifice. You know, you're going to have to go to school. but you may have to just work on this project or even work a job. You're going to have to sacrifice
something.
You're going to have to sacrifice something.
I mean, you guys, you had to eat, sleep, food. Right?
Yeah.
That's what his shirt says, by the way. You can't see if he had a shirt, but it says Eat, Sleep, Food, the name of the company.
Yeah.
Do you remember, and again, remind us, how old is the company?
The company is about, 13 years. When we started the company, Viet was probably at the age of 11 or 10 years old. And so that's like with me, with us being at that event and you guys doing your presentation, you guys have the same power. You guys have the same know-how, but you got to want it. You can't wait for somebody just to give it to you. And there's a place for inventors in this world, and you should know that. So you got to you just got to really
Hard work still wins, right?
Yeah,
and no excuses.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, oh, I don't have mentors, or I don't have facilities, or I couldn't find anybody to support my idea. You kind of have to, instead of working within your circumstances, you have to kind of make your own circumstances.
Yeah. And at the same time, you got to understand, we didn't have money like when we started the business. We knew that we get our first client, then we'll get some money.
Do you remember when you got your first client?
Well, yes, but we remember when we got our first client who gave us that break, and she had a established name in Rochester. She had two local
clothing stores.
Yeah, clothing stores, and her name was Rita
Mitchell.
Yeah, Rita Mitchell, and she had connections in Washington. So we were supposed to charge her $5,000 for a website, but I knew her name had some value, and I knew that she knew probably half of the town. So with me buying that relationship, with us charging half of the price of that website, that gained us the respect of doing business.
So you cut the price?
Yeah, I cut the price, and okay. I was like, hey, we're here. We're trying to build a relationship. If you go up some doors for us. And she was actually our first to open up some doors for us. And it just kind of went from there.
Our mission was to really build our brand and our name, and to really build that relationship with different companies, not so much as the money part. We knew that we could not get rich just off of that, you know. So the branding and the name and the service and having a good service comes first.
And also, too, and you got to say, you have a lot of, like, mom and pop shops within the inner city, even, you know, small corporations. But a lot of these mom and pop shops and corporations, they don't know the value of marketing, you see? And sometimes when you have goods and you have a nice storefront, but if nobody don't know about you, how can you expect to get clients?
Right.
How can you expect to get your mission out there? So that was one of me and VI focus, is to educate the inner city, but also the mom and pop shops on the reason behind marketing. And a lot of people think that, hey, I got a business, and I don't need to advertise. I don't need to market. Okay.
They'll come to me.
Yeah, they'll come to me.
Right, right.
But wait on your brothers and sisters and your cousins, and they'll keep you in debt, because they're always going to want to borrow something.
Malcolm Deitner, you listening to this? What do you take away from hearing them talk about everything they went through? What do you think? Are you there, Malcolm? Are you still there?
Oh, yeah.
What do you think about when they talk about everything they went through to become successful? What do you think?
I think they did it right.
and also, in your situation, too, it's more of like, hey, I have this app. I don't know how to make apps right now. And, you know, there's so many ways to success. You know, you can take the route where you're going to learn it yourself. Then you're going to take a route where you're going to get a venture capitalist, and you're going to find a vendor. You're going to have the option to work with a design firm, app to go in on it with you, and to collaborate with you and create it. You know, so there's so many different options, but it's just...
And I think, Malcolm, we did a segment in the first hour before we had you on the program about this thing called Makerspace. And I reckon you should get in there, get into the Rochester Makerspace, because it sounds like a place where it's a place where a lot of people get together with a lot of different skills and ideas, and you never know who you're going to run into, you know. And there's also the other thing I'd say to you too that I know about is there is a Rochester app meetup group. That's a monthly group that gets together, and they're just people who are into making apps. So if you went in there and did a pitch of your project to the Rochester app meetup group, you may well find some people who say, hey, I really want to take this to the next level because it's I can do it as part of my course at RIT, whatever. So I think just trying to find a couple of places that you can just show up and do keep on doing the pitch that you obviously did really well because these guys are talking you up. see if you can get into the Rochester Makerspace or check out the Rochester App Meetup group.
And Malcolm, good luck to you, man. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
You're welcome. Thank you for talking to me.
You're welcome. Great to have you on board. So Malcolm Drighton, part of the team, so it was called Ransom VVR, I think was the app. And there were some other ideas there we didn't get a chance to talk. Did you see some of the other app, the presentations as well? We'll do shout-outs for the emoji app. There was like an emoji, a new emoji, where people could do customized emojis.
Oh, no, we weren't part of that one.
Okay, so you only saw that one. Okay, so this is just for the edification of our listeners and my co-host. The emoji app, there was a fashion-based thrift store, and there was an idea called Freak Your Sneaks.
Yes.
Which is about Latrell, tell us about Freak Your Sneaks. You saw that one.
Freak Your Sneaks is more of a custom sneaker, just something more catered to... just different, you know. They'll take a Michael Jordan classic and switch it up to a whole different, a funky type of style. Just different, not your common type of
And they also
Nike
brought something. In co-branding, you know, with a Despicable Me style. And I liked their presentation because everything that they were talking about was a lot of positive.
Right.
It was a lot of branding with different, and it was more about individualism.
Yeah, and we think that they handled their presentation pretty well, but the other one was more just...
Scalable.
Scalable and me via direction of something that we would...
Right.
Like to know more about.
And right. maybe in potentially invest in.
You mean it wasn't just another I've got the new Facebook?
Or the new Twitter, but Facebook just different.
Yeah. No, right. We laugh about that. We don't mean to demean any ideas.
No.
But the bottom
no.
line is, though, I think Viet's point is, you know, a lot's been done. And Latrell was saying that some of these ideas that stand out are the ones that catch you because there are a lot of great ideas that are brand new out there in people are just looking for support with them. So,
And also, old ideas can even be successful, too. You know, think about it. Instagram is not that crazy. It's kind of
just focus.
Making a picture-based Twitter. But the thing is, the way they went into the market, the way they marketed it, and the way they only had it on iPhone to kind of maybe even build up the hype maybe. You know, so you can massage an own idea as well.
Very good.
Yeah. Thanks very much for joining us, guys. It's been great to have your input
Thank
on that
you.
And to
Thank
hear
you.
It's kind of an interesting, you know, project to be something, you know, the sort of the Shark Tank model, but also kind of aiming at young people, the city's young people, and a kind of really, you know, fertile area for creativity and support. And obviously the importance of mentoring, you know, really clear in the advice that you've been giving on air today as well.
Oh, and I also still, I think that a lot of people actually are trying to protect their idea more than anything. And, you know, I'm no legal consultant, but in terms of like patenting and things like that, our way is really more of the first in the market. You know, unless you're a giant corporation, you got all that stuff. I think that the best way to protect your idea is to really just be the first to be out there.
To put it out.
Yeah, and that's the great way to protect it.
Well, congrats on your success with Foo, and thanks for sharing your insight, especially with the kids in the city who have these ideas who need some mentoring. So thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Viet Nguyen and Latrell Liptrot from Foo Concepts. Check them out online. And thanks again, guys, for being with us. We're going to take a break and come back on a totally different topic.
Totally different topic. Very short break. It's Innovation Friday. That's what we do here. We're right back on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, we talk to the author of a book called XL Love. Sarah Varney writes about America's obesity epidemic and how it impacts our marriages and our love lives. Then we hear from the law enforcement community. What do they think about the militarization of police? Is it effective? Is it necessary here in Rochester and around the country in light of what's happening in Ferguson? It's all coming up Monday.
This week on Ken Rudin's Political Junkie, I take the ice bucket challenge with George W. Bush. Ow! Rate Rick Perry's mugshot, and find some political common ground in Ferguson.
The parties are reordering, and it's not really clear how this shakes out.
This week on Ken Rudin's Political Junkie, from WAMU in Washington and PRX, the Public Radio Exchange.
And that'll be tonight at 8 on your NPR news station.
I'm Evan Dawson. Welcome back to Connections. It's the fourth Friday of the month, and that means it's Innovation Friday. And the host, the editor of the Innovation Trail is Matthew Leonard. What's next, Matthew?
Evan, we're going to talk about an interesting ideas paper that I came across from. It's a centrist think tank. It's kind of a moderate think tank called Third Way. They do a lot of work in the energy sector, and there was a really interesting ideas paper that came out just this week. It's called Energy Meet the Internet, and it's co-authored by Ingrid Akerlund, who's online from Washington to talk about what the internet brings to the energy market. Ingrid, thanks very much for being with us on Innovation Friday.
Thanks for having me. I'm very happy to be here.
Hey, so this was an interesting paper. I'll put a link up on the Connections and on Innovation Trail as well. But this was this is a really interesting. I kind of think of it as a discussion paper or as an ideas paper where you talked about the potential power of the internet, the information of the internet, particularly the data that the internet can push, and its relationship to how we understand the energy market. I know you covered a lot of things in the paper, but what was your kind of central starting point for this particular paper?
You know, for the motivation of the paper, I'd really say it comes down to one thing, is that we often, especially in the energy sector, we see this dichotomy where people think that you're going to have either economic growth or you're going to be able to stop climate change. And that's just a false dichotomy, and I think that really motivated us to say, no, wait, there is a sector that lies in the middle of the tech sector and the energy sector, and it's producing jobs, it's producing economic growth, and it's saving CO2. So we really wanted to highlight that for policymakers.
Right. So for example, you're talking about one of the things that caught my eye was the value that some of this existing data from the energy sector can actually have. So for example, real-time information about energy and people's access to that is a really important component of the debate that you outlined there. Economic growth and
absolutely. It's fascinating to think about it that when you go and tank your car, you know ahead of time how much you're paying for the gas that you're putting in your car, but you have no idea at any given moment how sensitive it is to produce the electricity that's keeping your lights on.
Right.
And for a small residential consumer like you or me, that might not matter. But for a larger electricity consumer, that matters a lot. So especially when we're integrating more renewables onto the grid, being able to change prices depending on how much electricity is available at a moment could really revolutionize the sector and lower the amount of energy we use overall, save people money, and sort of make our system just more efficient in overall. But we need policy changes to make that happen too.
Right. So what are you talking about? Are you talking about sort of like real-time information about the spot market for energy, the energy that's being bought for your business, say, or for your house, and the access that people can have to that information?
For example, I don't know if you guys have talked about demand response on your program, but that's basically where when you're getting to a really hot day in summer and everybody turns their air conditioning on, instead you're going to ask some consumers to lower their energy use so that you don't need to run the extra power plants that run on oil and gas to cover those last sort of 2-5%. So by doing so, you can save money because people are spending less on their energy use and save the planet by not using those very dirty peaker plants.
Right, and of course, this is kind of really, it's a relevant discussion because of the EPA's emissions targets which are obviously targeting the coal-fired power plants. That's been a big debate in the Midwest and even parts of upstate here as well. So, but you make the point. And which is kind of obvious, but that people until you get the bill, and maybe it doesn't matter to small consumers, but I'm sure a lot of people in this market after the polar vortex of mm-hmm. you know, had the sticker shock of their power bill hitting them, and then, you know, and so you're making the point that if you had some sense of what you're actually paying for, it would help you make better mm-hmm. decisions around your own, even your own mm-hmm. household energy consumption.
Absolutely. So for example, I know that National Grid serves a lot of upstate New York. So National Grid has signed on to this program called Green Button. So energy consumers can download their data after they have used the electricity. But the role here for small innovative companies is that small innovative companies could build platforms that then help users predict their future energy uses as well.
Right.
So there's a lot of room for innovation in this sector that has to do with when you get people more information, more people can then make better decisions. And that's really the central concept we're getting at.
Right. So just talk a little bit about why there's this need for kind of federal regulation. I can see that getting into, you know, getting into some interesting political debates about the role of government, et cetera. So why do you think this is something that needs to be sort of a mandate?
Sure. No, it's a fair question. And I think that we were careful to try to underline here that unlike a lot of federal law where you ask for, oh, we need this many millions of dollars to produce the next technology, and that's sort of how we think of the government getting into innovation, it's really here about updating the rules of the road. So it's about making energy information accessible and transparent. And those are two things you do need rules for. So,
right. Yep.
Sorry.
No, go on. Yep.
No, I was going to say, so for example, something that they do in Europe that they don't do here in the U.S. is that at the point of sale of a building, you can know what the energy rating of that building is. Does it use a lot of energy or does it use a little energy? And that is something that we probably would need to mandate in the U.S. that has to happen. But the Federal Housing Administration has the authority to do so. So that means that we could actually then give consumers the information before they buy the house. This is how much energy your house will use. So you can add that cost on and make a more informed decision.
I'd like to jump on Twitter here because there are folks who are reacting as we talk about the notion of if they could see as they, even hour by hour, and Ingrid's been talking about some larger scale things, businesses, et cetera. But people are saying, Ingrid, that if they could see what their consumption was on an hour by hour basis, kind of like on a meter mm-hmm. or register at their house, it would change their habits. Mm-hmm. Let me read a few tweets, and then there's a couple that I would like you to respond to. Ben says,
sure.
It would at least help me budget better in the winter. Jeremy says, my friend and housemate used to participate in a program where we could see more of what we were consuming as we went. It led to a few times where we tried lowering usage. Saj says, I would love this. I could finally convince the missus to turn the light off when she leaves a room. And David says, I can only imagine there are numerous things drawing energy that I'm unaware of in my own home. Real time would be nice. So those are some general reactions, but then there's a couple that I'd like mm-hmm. to get your take on. Jared writes to us, the Nest aims for that, although not as real time. We have one and are pleased with it. I don't know what he's talking about. Do you?
You talk about the Nest in the paper, I think. Yeah.
He's referring to the Nest thermometer. So Nest is a company. They build smart meters that measure electricity. They also build smoke alarms. And, in this very little energy and IT space, they made big news in January, February, I think, of this year when Google bought them for like $3 billion. So,
right.
Big deal.
And Laura writes, I have a time-of-use meter, so I get a reduced rate based on the time of day. I run the dishwasher in the middle of the night, etc.
Yep. As I understand it now, there's some utilities across the country, including PG&E in California and Con Edison in New York. I think that a Con Edison's program is there's a voluntary time of use pricing. So you can choose as a consumer to say, no, I don't want to have a constant electricity price. I would rather have a lower price when electricity is cheap and a more expensive one when it is not. So, but this is a voluntary thing that consumers have to buy into. And by doing so, you can then run your dishwasher at night when electricity is cheap and save money.
Right. And I think this is where you get into an argument around bandwidth and sort of internet equity as well, because as I understand mm-hmm. it, in some smaller markets, I think it's in Denmark, for example, a lot of this is automated where there's actually an information flow going to let's say it's a sort of an automated trigger in the house which is able to detect when the spot prices are lowest, and then it'll run the dishwasher or run the washing machine or whatever. So it's, but it's all predicated on kind of access to a flow of information, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you actually have some startups that are doing a similar thing, one called STEM out in California, and then they're doing it with batteries instead.
Right.
So the battery gives and receives information, and then it sort of switches on when it notices that electricity is getting really, really expensive, and it turns off. So it's not supposed to cover all of your energy, but just those little, little peaks.
Right. So is this where we get I wanted to do a bigger discussion around smart grids, but it seemed too intimidating a topic to do. But this, for people, smart grids is a combination where you're sort of a micro energy grid that involves storage capacity that's able to ride out some of these peaks and troughs of the spot market that you were talking about, right? And there's quite a lot of development. This is a sort of a real hot area of development within energy, right?
It's a very hot area of development, and it's also, just as you have noticed, it's a very hard topic to really get your hand around. It's so big. There's so many different innovations coming here. I mean, you can include anything from smart meters to batteries you put on the entire grid to predicting when the sun and wind will the sun will shine and the wind will blow, to having sensors on your distribution line so you know, oh, the electricity, this line isn't working too well, we need to go fix it. So it's a really vast, complicated concept, so to speak. But yes, that's exactly an example of how a consumer would use it.
I don't mean to divert the conversation, but we do try to include listeners as they listen online, and we're thrilled that you're listening online, maybe at work, sneaking in some connections, or driving around and stopping to tweet because you're so interested in what we're talking about. And Robert says, when you talk about clean energy, can you at least admit that natural gas is cleaner than coal and oil? Around here, Ingrid, everything always comes back to hydrofracking and natural gas, the Marcellus Shale, et cetera. So I don't want to divert the conversation too much, but what do you make of that comment there about clean energy? And I've heard a geologist at Syracuse University say the same thing, that we can talk about the grid of the future, and we can talk about energy that is scalable, solar and many other things, but in the meantime, we need to get away from coal and oil, and maybe gas is cleaner. That's what Robert is saying on Twitter. What do you say to that?
I think that I would say that, of course, if you look at the amount of CO2 emitted per amount of energy produced, the natural gas indeed is cleaner than coal. That's no question about it. And I think, as even in the U.S., we will continue to rely on both of those forms of energy, partially to support part of our electricity system for a long time to come. And that's why it's so important, even as we're getting more natural gas in the country, to keep on driving and using innovation to improve energy efficiency. So that's really why you can't just talk about one or the other. It's not just production. It's also energy efficiency. And that's sort of why we also wrote the paper to point focus to the innovation that happens on the energy efficiency side.
Right. And you also talk about, let's talk a little bit about investment, in other words, where money is going. And this is a particularly important part of the renewables debate because of the role of things like production credits, subsidies, and also just dealing with some of the technological gaps that still exist with some sectors of renewable, like wind and solar, where there's where there's still some catch up. Just talk a little bit about, so how do you see the sort of information, the IT energy sector kind of as a part of investment and where money goes in the energy market?
Absolutely. We pulled some statistics that you can, I'm just going to repeat them here from the paper, and if you download the paper, then you'll read them too. But so U.S. venture capital investment in the energy sector has fallen 40% since 2008, when it peaked at $4.6 billion. And meanwhile, the venture capital investment in this area that we were talking about today, the energy IT sector, has risen 55% since 2009.
Let's just reinforce that for folks. So you're saying that the figures that you've got, so you're saying venture capital investment in the energy industry has fallen 40% since a peak of 4.6.
Since 2008.
Okay, but money is going into energy IT, in other words, information about energy. The transmission of data around energy is right. Okay.
It's so, it's rising. So it means it's gotten bigger as a share. It started out as a very small share, so the share has grown a
lot.
And you can see that, for example, by the investments that in the Nest thermostat, in lots of different companies, O-Power, Enernoc. There's dozens of different companies that are actually gaining quite a bit of prominence in this area.
Right. So what does that mean? What does that mean? So in other words, the information about the energy is kind of more, is a better return than actually investing in the infrastructure of the energy itself.
I don't think that's necessarily true. I think that investing in both of them is certainly important. I do think that one reason you see that the venture capital industry has gravitated towards this idea of energy IT is because these companies, you can test whether they're going to be successful in a shorter amount of time. If you invest in a nuclear company or a biofuels company, you're going to wait at least a decade to see whether the research and development you put into it is going to pay off. These types of companies, you can get there faster. So
right.
There's absolutely still a need for investment in large-scale energy infrastructure.
Is part of you talk a little bit about standardization, and we saw that I think in say disaster recovery is a sort of a time frame when a lot of people become aware of, oh my goodness, there's actually a whole bunch of different power companies in New York State, and they don't always kind of talk to each other, or you know, so that's a time when the energy market is kind of exposed a little bit because of the siloing of information, perhaps. So you're sort of encouraging some sort of levels of standardization where information kind of crosses the free market and you know empowers consumers, empowers industry, empowers lawmakers to be able to you know get a better handle on the energy on the information of the energy sector.
I don't think I 100% understood your question. Could you repeat it?
So just about standardizing. So you're talking about the need to, for example, have some open standards.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, yes.
Yeah, so I'm just thinking, you know, just in a competitive market that different companies, you know, if you've got different power companies, there isn't always, you know, and we're saying that this information is enormously valuable. There can be a lot of incentives for, you know, for companies to keep information confidential.
Absolutely, but I think there it's important to differentiate also between the concept of open data and open standards.
Yep.
I do not presume to say that companies should release all their data publicly, but I do think it's important that we have open standards. Excuse me.
Yeah, sure.
Give her a second to cough that out. I was in that position just recently, leaving a long message for someone, a very important scientist, and I ended by my throat became sandpaper.
Right.
It was a terrible thing.
I'm
you all right?
So sorry. There you go. I think I'm back now.
That's fine. We kept you talking for quite a while. We've got a couple of minutes left. So, Ingrid, yeah, you're also saying that that there is you're actually in your paper. You're actually talking about supporting. You think there's a bill that's being sponsored by Senator Mark Udall that creates an incentive program to encourage utilities to grant consumers access to energy information. So you're actually you are taking a political position as far as this particular piece of legislation is concerned and saying this will be a good thing. What sort of incentives are you talking about to encourage, you know, to encourage companies to give their consumers better access to energy information?
Yeah, so the issue here is that a lot of utilities have adopted the green button standards, including several in New York, but some have committed to adopting them, but they haven't actually implemented them yet.
Right.
So it's important that they continue to do so. And by giving the utilities incentives from the federal government to do so, it will sorry, my throat is still very dry.
That's okay. So, yeah, I understand. So you're saying that, there's a role for federal incentives, and that really comes down to encouraging utilities to be able to make that information accessible to, you know, to consumers. So the green,
Well, the idea there, too, is that we would prefer to not have a mandate. You don't want to say all utilities must do this. You want to say we're encouraging you to do this but not requiring it. That leaves the utilities to make a decision.
Before we let you go, and I think we're going to have to let her go in a minute there, Matthew, just out of our concern for Ingrid and her well-being. Ingrid Acklin is a fellow of the Clean Energy Program of the centrist policy think tank, thirdway.org. Can I ask you one off-the-beaten-path question before we go, Ingrid?
Absolutely.
Okay, so we're here in the Finger. We're not far from the Finger Lakes. We're broadcasting in the Finger Lakes. You are someone who looks very closely at climate change, energy costs, etc. If you were running a winery in Healdsburg, California, would you be concerned that climate change would impact its future?
I think we absolutely need to be concerned that climate change is going to impact the future of agriculture, even the agriculture we want to pay a lot of money for.
West Wines, I saw it on her profile, and I'm so interested that Ingrid.
That is true.
So Ingrid, you've got some family in the California wine industry.
Indeed. My parents run a small family-owned and operated winery in Healdsburg, California. So I hear very much about the California droughts and how climate change is impacting business.
It's a reminder to us because we've had a wet and cold summer, but we can be very myopic about climate, and I think we have to be very careful in sort of following day-to-day, week-to-week, because if up here in the Northeast we say, oh, it's been a wet, cool summer, but it's been brutal, I know, in many ways on the West Coast, hasn't it?
We have the polar vortex, so we have had changes in our climate as well.
Well, we're happy to be growing grapes in the Finger Lakes. We think it's going to only improve in that way. Ingrid, thank you. Matthew, I didn't mean to divert us too much there. I couldn't help it.
It's the peril of the LinkedIn profile.
I saw non-lignified grape stems in her background. I had to at least check it out as my own background.
Well, it only goes to prove the power of the information that can be transmitted through
exactly
the internet.
Right.
Ingrid Acklin,
yeah,
is a fellow at the Clean Energy Program at Third Way, as Evan said, thirdway.org. The paper that she co-authored with Melissa Carey is called Energy, Meet the Internet. And we'll put the links to that in the usual places, which is innovationtrail.org, wxxi.org/connections. And the podcast will be available probably later today. We'll see how we go. But it's always up there for review and re-listening later.
Ingrid's going to go find a West Wine Sauvignon Blanc or Viognier to help her throat. And we appreciate the time and great insight, Ingrid. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
All right, Matthew Leonard. That puts the wraps on another Innovation Friday. You've been busy enough.
It does. Yeah, and a kind of interesting range of topics, hopefully, Evan. And thanks to all the people who are tweeting their input. Great to have that.
Yeah,
participation in the conversation.
Always enjoy that. Hey, where do we find the Innovation Trail online, Matthew?
Innovationtrail.org, and you can link through the WXXI webpage as well. Just a shout out for our Affordable Care Act project that we're underway with. Understanding the Affordable Care Act, we'd love you to take the survey, ask us your questions, queries, concerns about the Affordable Care Act.
And our thanks to John Andrus, the engineer behind the glass today. I'm Evan Dawson. It's been another great week on Connections right here on member-supported public radio.